This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Also sponsored by Windstar Farm. Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, welcoming everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet, all on our website at horseracingradio.net. You know, the thing that I really like most about hosting this show is each week I have the opportunity to visit with the hardworking men and women who in most cases have dedicated their entire life to this great sport and to making our sport a success. And with almost all of them, that tireless dedication comes back to their love of the horse. Then there's shows like tonight when I had the distinct privilege to welcome a racing legend to the show. And I can almost guarantee you that the one thing that keeps this gentleman motivated to get up each morning and get to the barn is the love of the horse. He has trained more than 6,400 winners in his illustrious career. He ranks fifth all time in number of wins. His runners have earned more than $83 million in purses. And despite the changing economics of the sport, that number still places him 26th all-time by earnings. He is Hall of Famer Jack Van Berg, and it is an absolute delight to have him with me on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Jack, welcome to the program.
Mike, thank you very much. It's a pleasure you having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board here for the next hour with us. And, you know, when I think back on those numbers and I think about some of those statements that I just made, I mean, look, you're 78 years young. You've been doing this a long time. And I'm going to ask you, am I right about it being the love of the horse that's at the core of what still motivates you every day?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you, like I tell everybody, if I liked whiskey like I liked horses, I'd be the biggest drunk in the world. I love horses. I love to take horses that haven't had a chance, that maybe have some small problems. And that's the way my dad did all his life, work on them. Maybe they got maybe the behavior problem, have ankles or knees and worked on them and made something out of them. And that's as much pleasure you can get out of doing something with animals. They just, if a horse could talk, they'd tell you how happy they are that what you're doing for them.
Well, I've had several trainers, Jack, tell me that those type of stories where they have a horse that may have some little issues here and there, and they put time into working with those horses, that those are the ones that are maybe even the most rewarding.
Well, I think so, Mike. Horses to me are like human beings. Same medicine works on human beings, works on horses. But it's like children. Some of them develop young in life. Some of them develop old. Some of them have problems. Some of them have mental problems. And some horses have mental problems. And then the only thing, a human can talk to you. A horse can't, so you got to figure them out. It's a blessing when you get them figured out, and it's to watch them change so much, you know what I mean, and be so happy. You can tell in their stall how happy they are if you fix what their problems are, you know?
Yeah, very much so. You've been doing that for a long time, Jack, and you do it as good as anybody that we've ever seen in the sport. So take me back to the beginning. You grew up in Columbus, Nebraska. Training horses, it was really all in your pedigree from the very beginning, wasn't it?
Well, my dad started with one horse. He was a farmer, and he went to Columbus, Nebraska, and built that sale barn the year I was born. He opened the new sale barn, which was the largest, probably one of the largest barns in the country yet, livestock auction. And he operated that, and then he bought a horse, and he started out and went from there to lead the country 14 years in a row and always win more races than any owner up till his time of his death, you know. But he was just a genius with horses. He taught me everything that he knew, and he'd give you enough rope to hang yourself. So you learn the hard way sometimes on things when any child thinks that they're smarter than their parents when you're growing up. And I found out the older I got, the smarter my dad got, you know. It was just one of those things. You get cocky when you're young, you know. So,
yeah.
But he was just a genius with horses and a perfectionist. I mean, if he told you to rub a leg 15 minutes, he didn't mean 14. He meant 15, and that's what you had to do with him.
What was it that made him so successful,
in
Jack?
This generation, if you talk to somebody about Whirlpool and a horse, they think you're going downtown to take a sauna or something. So they don't do it the old way anymore.
What was it that made him so successful? What was the key?
Well, my dad could, when I was growing up, and of course we had the livestock auction, so I was auctioneering and buying cattle and going to Omaha in the summer, training, then back to the cattle business. And then when he got sick, got older, I took over the horses. But he was a genius with horses. He just knew his horses, and he might say to you, you see this horse gallop by? Who is that? Well, you'd say, I'm a kid. I'd sit there and him hum and stammer. And he'd say, you dummy, you don't know. We had him 4 years ago. He knew every horse he ever seen. He didn't miss a one, you know? So he was a genius with horses, and he taught me everything he knew. And I learned, from experience from then on, you know?
Well, what are some of those main lessons that he did teach you that maybe you still remember even to this day?
Well, he sent me a horse I'll never forget called Noble Greer to Omaha. And he was a nice, sent him there for the little three-year-old handicaps in Omaha. And that horse was sore, man, he was sore. And my dad come to town, and he said, we want to work that horse. I said, Dad, he's sore. I said, he's sore in his shoulders. I said, Dad, I'm telling you, he's sore. Well, what'd you do to him? I said, he didn't do nothing. He come here this way. So the next morning he came out, he said, we're going to work that horse this morning. I said, work him? I said, he's sore. He said, put him in a set of ice boots. And that was the days when you used the old canvas ice boots. Ice him for 2 hours, we'll work him. Well, that horse worked in 58 and change that morning. It was at Exarvin. That was a mighty fast work. So as we're walking the horse back, brought him on the toe ring and cooling him out. As the horse came by, he said to me, did you get ice up on his shoulders? I said, no, I didn't get ice on his shoulders. He said, well, if you fix what's underneath them shoulders, it'll be okay. And that was a great lesson. And then when you tell him a horse was off behind, he'd say, if you fix what's in front, the rear will follow. So those were two lessons that stuck in my head. Well, you know.
Yeah.
So and then he taught me how to shoe horses and how to cut the when they get a pus pocket in their foot, he'd get the knife and shoe and stuff out and make me cut on that foot till I hit the pay dirt, hit the pus pocket. Showed me that if you cut that sole thin enough where you get just a little bit of blood, that pus pocket will come to that thing instead of going out the top of the horse, the cornet band, and then spending more time catching up, you know?
Wow. Wow. Now, Jack, you didn't start working with him until you were, around 30 years old or so? Is that right?
I didn't start working?
No, with him, with your dad. Or were you with him before that?
I walked horses in the old fairgrounds when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
I worked every summer. I didn't get to stay home. I went with the horses every summer. Every summer I did, and then I was at Omaha when I was 13 years old, and then when I got 15 and a half, I got my trainer's license in Omaha. But the guy that started out for my dad was Charlie Tanner.
Okay.
And I had to go with him because Charlie was in his 80s and he couldn't remember what he did the day before. So I had to tell him if he worked a horse or what he did. And Dad sent me the horse from Detroit with a horse called French Admiral that set track record with Momo. And he was a nasty horse when I was 14 years old. And I had to rub that horse. So,
wow.
it was, that horse has got to be, I could eat, feed him bananas, apples, oranges, the whole works.
Now, your dad was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1970, and I can imagine what a special day that had to be for you. What do you remember about that day?
Oh, yeah, I was, yeah, it was very festive. The first time he went to anything, they honored him in San Francisco at the Eclipse thing, and he got his picture taken with Bing Crosby out there. Of course, my dad rode with Al Hurt on the airplane up in first class, and my dad didn't know what a martini was. So we got to San Francisco, and I met him out there, and he said, boy, he said, that guy could really drink them martinis. I said, what? Oh, he said, he drinks them martinis. And I said, you mean martinis? He said, whatever it was, he drank a lot of them on the way out there. So, and my dad was just country. He was nothing to him. He was just country and all business.
Yeah, what do you remember about seeing him inducted in the Hall of Fame that day?
Pardon?
What do you remember about seeing him and watching him be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, he was just, I think he, what year did he go in the Hall of Fame?
1970.
See, he passed away on May 3rd of 1971. He went in the Hall of Fame, and then he had a stroke that November.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. But my dad was not fancy. He was just plain. He was just the salt of the earth. A gentleman, a fine gentleman. He taught me when you're on an elevator, don't have your hat on with a lady on there. Don't step on the elevator, off the elevator in front of the lady. I've never forgot that stuff. Don't walk through a door that you don't hold open for a lady, you know?
Yeah, so, visiting with anyway, Hall of Famer Jack Van Berg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, how about your siblings? Tell me about your family. Were any of them involved in racing in any way?
My oldest son, Timmy, trained horses for me for a while. And he's a very good horseman, but he's also a very good mechanic or can fix anything, you know? But he didn't care for the 7 days a week. When you're training horses, it's 7 days a week, you know?
Yeah.
And my youngest son, Tom, was training horses. Then his little boy got leukemia, so he had to quit the track. And his wife, she does all the stuff for City of Louisville, bringing the conventions in, so her insurance took care of everything. Little boys in remission, playing ball and everything now. But that's why Tom quit training. And I got a middle daughter that was with me all the time with the horses, could train, but she went in the jewelry business. And I had two other daughters. They live in Colorado. So,
you know, I can remember getting to know Tom when I was working at Keeneland. I was working in Horse ID several years ago, and Tom was always one of the nicest guys that you would ever want to meet. Just a complete class
well, thank
act.
Thank you very much, Mike.
No,
he's a fine gentleman, and I'm going to tell you, he took care of that boy 24/7 with the leukemia. And, I always tell everybody I was not a good father, Mike. I was always working, and I was not a good husband or a good father. I was a good provider. That's all I can tell you.
Well, I would imagine now you have an opportunity, though, to work with Tom and with Tim and with all your kids now and say, hey, you know, I'm here for you now. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm there for them whenever they need me. I'm there for them, yeah.
Yeah.
That ain't no problem.
So what was it like with...
A lot of fathers go to the ball games and everything, like Tom... His two sons play ball and everything. He's at the ball games. He's refereeing and does all that, you know. And that was never my cup of tea, you know.
You mentioned Tom and Tim both, you know, working with you at some point in their career. What was it like having your son working with you, much the way you did with your dad?
Well, see, Mike, it was a little different deal with my father. I did everything for him. I trimmed the feet. I fixed the horse's teeth. I floated their teeth. He had me so I could do everything, and I looked after him and took care of him. And my dad had a bad heart for 20 years, but aren't stable even when he got in bad health, never lost a step. We just kept along the same beat, just kept going, you know. And I lived, I guess you'd have to say I lived to make my dad happy. That's what I call. Kids are not like that nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
They got their own thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I read a quote as I was getting ready for the show from Tom a few years back. And here's what his quote was, Jack. I want to read it to you. He said, My dad had an incredible amount of passion and energy and a knowledge at his fingertips that was truly amazing. And then he went on to say, I haven't met many horsemen I could compare to him. I've known some great trainers, but I seriously don't know if they were the horseman he was. That's a powerful statement. What's that mean to you to hear those words from your son?
Well, it's very nice. It's very nice. It's very flattering and stuff. And Tom, when he graduated from college, he was an excellent student, and he called me up and said, Dad, I'd like to train horses. So he'd come and live with me for 2 years, and then I sent him to Maryland with the stable horses for Mr. John Franks. So he was a good horseman. He did very well. It was just unfortunate that his son got leukemia, and he had to make a choice, you know, where her insurance took care of everything for him. So
yeah,
or he would have been training yet today.
Jack, tell me about that decision to go out on your own after working with your dad for so long.
What, you mean after my father died?
Just to start, you know, training on your own, continue.
My father died May 3rd of 1971, and I trained horses bad all year long because everybody was looking at me saying I'd fall on my face after he died, and I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, you know. And so I trained till about November. I finally shook my head and said I better wake up. So then I just went on, and then Shimron Farn W.O. Bridge out of Detroit, Bloomfield Hill, Michigan, bought 119 horses from us, the dad's stable. And I trained for them until January 1st of 1975. From 73 and 74, I trained for them.
Tell me about some of the people that helped you in those early days when you were just getting started.
Well, I've had Joe Petalino was a good man. Mark Wallerstadt was a good man. Lauren Mattelli was good. Donald Ropp. Sammy Almarez, that's been with me 35 years. I've had some very good people. The guy that runs Lone Star and Remington, Scott Wells, worked for me, run an outfit for me when he was a kid. The greatest pleasure that I've had, Mike, out of my book, my biography that Chris Katulak wrote, was people in every place that I've come up and thanked me and bought a book and thanked me for helping them when they were young, guide them in the right direction and giving them work ethics. And that's the thing that I thank the Lord for every day, that my father gave me good work ethics.
Yeah, very much so. And by the way, if people want to know the name of that book, it's called Jack from Grit to Glory. And yeah, you mentioned TVG,
it's
former TVG analyst Chris Katulak.
Facebook, yeah, the whole works.
Yeah, it's amazing. And to think back of that, you know, what that title represents, Jack from Grit to Glory, I think you couldn't have come up with a more appropriate name, could you?
Well, I think that's the only book that Chris has ever written. And I had people in California want to write my biography, and I didn't like them. They like to put nasty things in, you know, and I didn't believe that. And Chris did an incredible job, and he interviewed all of my sisters that are left and the whole family and everything, you know, and he just did an incredible job. And I had read a one-page article he wrote, so I went to him and asked him if he would be interested in writing my book, and he said, give me 10 days and I'll think it over. And 10 days back, he come and told me, he said, yeah, I'll do it. Just amazing, amazing, Mike, what he did, the interviews and stuff that he did with people.
Yeah, he went and talked to everybody, didn't he? He talked to all your brothers, your sisters. He talked to everybody he could, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. He interviewed people you just can't believe. I mean, he got things in the books about my family that my dad and I, the things that I didn't even know about, you know?
So. Are there some specific challenges when you're putting a book together about yourself, Jack?
Well, what do you mean by challenges? I tried to tell him everything about the horse and everything, but, you know, I'm like any other guy. I've done things in my life I'm not proud of. I was married for 20 years, and my wife divorced me, and I was married another 13, and that one divorced me, so I'm not too successful in the marriage department, you know? But them kind of things, if you had your life to do over, you wouldn't do, you know what I mean? I'm a workaholic. My dad gave me work ethics, and I'm a workaholic. And that's what I like doing. I like to be busy, and of course I can't work like I used to now, you know. It's a chore to get around now, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you're still dedicated to the passion of the sport and to the passion of the horse, as we touched on in the beginning, and that's still motivating Jack Van Berg, I'm sure. What else motivates you, Jack, to be out there every single morning and keep going with training horses?
Well, the people work for me. I love my people who work for me. I enjoy seeing them do good and seeing them, when you got a good man or a good woman work for you that does their work and takes pride in their horses and bring their horses out looking good and stuff, and then watch your horses develop. That's what takes you to that barn every morning. When you get one, you buy one that you think's got a few problems, and you correct them, and that horse starts to train good and do good. That really motivates you in the mornings. So,
what's the key to being successful as a trainer in this sport?
Well, it's like I tell anybody that worked for me. Most trainers don't tell their help why they do things, what they do things, and why they do them for. I tell my people, when they leave me, if they can't train a horse, they're too damn dumb to do anything. Because I'll tell them everything I do, why I do it, and what to do. And if they'll follow what I tell them, they'll be successful. And I've had a lot of Frankie Brothers, Billy Mott, Lauren Rotelli, Wayne Catalano. All them people have been very successful training horses. But and if you go to their barn, they still do as the way that I did, and I did the way my father did. You know what I mean? They feed and do everything the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You mentioned Bill Mott, and you mentioned Frankie Brothers, and those are household names in our sport, Jack, and I know how proud you must be that they went on to have that kind of success. What was it like for you to watch them go through their careers, and even still with Bill Mott, and watching him develop and continue to excel?
I'm just as proud of him as if he was my own child. Of course, I always say the people who worked for me maybe got closer to me than my own children did, you know, because they were there 7 days a week, day in and out, you know? So, but I'm just as proud and happy for them, and try to watch wherever they got a big horse in. The boy Wayne Catalano's done very well. He did well as a rider. I taught him to ride, and he's a heck of a good horseman now, and leading trainer in Chicago for the last few years, you know? So those kind of people, it makes you feel good. He was in trouble, got kicked out of school when he was 14 and a half, and his mother signed him over to me, and I took him. And he's a great family man and a great trainer and a great horseman now. So it's just, you know, makes you very proud of him when they go ahead. But if you got somebody that works for you and you try to teach him and he thinks he's smarter than you are, he never will learn.
Yeah, well said. What do you remember, Jack, about the day that Bill Mott and Frank Brothers, and that they came to you and said, hey, I want to try this on my own? What advice did you give them?
Well, I was cutting back, and I just told them. I said, I'm there to help you, whatever you need. They called me up after they left on their own when they had a question or anything. And I was going to California, and I was going to cut back. I'd been on an airplane every night, every other night, you know. So I was getting tired of traveling, and my first wife had divorced me, so I was going to go to California and cut back and take it, you know, try to train better horses and stuff.
How difficult is it to train horses and still maintain a family life?
Well, it's if you're going to have a lot of horses, it's a hard thing to do to have a family life. It's 7 days a week, and you're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and when the sun goes down, you're ready to go to bed. And if you got a family, they're not up early in the morning, and they're wanting to stay up when you're going to bed, you know.
Yeah, it's long hours, and it takes an unbelievable amount of dedication to be a horse trainer in this sport. And I don't know if people always realize that, Jack. I think they see, you know, all the glory, so to speak, and they see all the big wins, but they don't realize what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, they don't. They don't know. And like I tell everybody, these horses, most race horses, are taken better care of than most people are. They get a bath every day. They get a new fresh bed to sleep on. You know, the good horsemen take care of them like that. They got a good place to lay, sleep, and a bath every day, and a rub down every day. They get better care than people get, you know?
Yeah, they do. There's no doubt about it. And I think when people come out and they see that, then they realize what a great sport this really is. How much different is training horses today, Jack, as opposed to when you first started?
Well, it's a lot different, Mike. It's a lot different. These young guys are on the telephones, on the computers and all that. And back in my day, starting out, if a guy come to you to train, wanted to train a horse, you wouldn't take a horse from another guy because it was more like family back in my days, you know, at the racetrack. And nowadays, these young guys are on the computer, on the telephone, trying to hustle horses and hustle their stable, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of hell on the racetrack nowadays, Mike. I'd have to say the veterinary's training most of the horses, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually heard that from several other trainers as well. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jack Van Berg on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jack, I'll ask you this question because I always find it so interesting when trainers answer because they give me so many different answers. But when you do think back on everything that you've accomplished in this sport, and we're going to talk about some of the bigger accomplishments as we move throughout the program here, but what's the one thing that Jack Van Berg is most proud of?
Well, I wasn't Kentucky Derby with Alice Sheba. That's, if you got somebody training horses and they tell you they don't want any Kentucky Derby, they're a liar, you know? That was, hell, I still get tears in my eyes to this day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, speaking of Alice Sheba, we are going to talk about him.
He was just, that horse was so good, had so much talent and everything, and he had so much charisma and stuff. He was just a blessing to have and a blessing to be around.
Well, Ali Sheba voted Horse of the Year back in 1988. Of course, he won the Derby in 87.
I had behavior problems a little bit, and I straightened them out with the earmuffs and stuff. And when we got beat 2-0 in the Super Derby, both years of the $3 million race, you know, that was a great thing. So.
Well, Jack, I want to hear those stories coming up in the second half of the show. We're going to take a quick break. We're back. We'll talk about Gate Dancer. We'll talk about the great Ali Sheba as well. It's all ahead in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay with us. Attention, calling all racehorses. Nominations are now open for the 2015 Fasic Tipton Selected Summer Horses of Racing Age Sale to be held immediately following the July Selected Yearling Sale on July 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. It's the hottest sale of the summer, boasting a $77,000 average and a sale topper of $1,075,000 in 2014. The sale attracts major buyers who are there for one purpose, to buy. 128 horses were offered at last year's sale, a whopping 109 horses sold to 78 unique buyers, with 20 horses topping the $100,000 mark. Go online to nominate your horse today at HORANominations2015.com. That's HORANominations2015.com. The Fasic Tipton Selected Summer Horses of Racing Age Sale and the July Selected Yearling Sale. July 9th at the Fasic Tipton Sale Pavilion on Newtown Pike in Lexington, Kentucky.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosso Maya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
And they're off to New York, the premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York-bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York-breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York-breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York-breds, get with the program. The best program.
From start to finish, the $500,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile is the biggest and most exciting race of the year in central Pennsylvania. This year's best three-year-old grass horses will be at Penn National Saturday, May 30th, for the 2015 Penn Mile. Last year, sensational winner Bobby's Kitten went on to win the $1 million Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint Championship. The Penn Mile program features more than $1 million in purses, and the All-Stakes Pick 4 starts with first race post time at 6 p.m.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
Joined by Coach Bill Parcells, who led the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in both 1986 and 1990. And yes, he won both of those. What do you remember about the day that you won your first race?
I just remember being excited. It's the same feeling you get when they kick the ball off in football and they put that horse in the gate and your name's on it. It's a little like football, but you have absolutely no control in horse racing. And in football, at least, you have a little bit of control in game management and decisions that are made. But it's just the luck of the draw, but that doesn't reduce the excitement. The excitement's the same, the adrenaline's the same, and when that horse goes in there, you know, you're definitely paying attention.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
The $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint, Saturday, May 30th. Evangeline Downs Racetrack is running 11 races with five big stakes worth $640,000. Play the $100,000 guaranteed pick four. Bet it at DRF Bets. Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post, 4.05 p.m. Eastern. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.com and EVDTurfSprint.com.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the final furlong. Walk White is tenacious. Ali Sheba is right there and on the outside seeking the gold. Ali Sheba with the short lead. He's unyielding, seeking the gold. A final move as they come to the wire. And Ali Sheba, America's horse, has done it. Ali Sheba returns to the side of his greatest victory. And he does it here again at Churchill Downs. Ali Sheba wins the world's richest horse race, and he's now the world's richest horse.
Tom Durkin at his very best, the 1988 Breeders' Cup Classic, and Ali Sheba beneath the twin spires at Churchill Downs, getting the victory that afternoon. And boy, what a performance it was. What a career, what a racehorse. And of course, Ali Sheba, trained by the great Jack Van Berg, and continuing this visit here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Welcome back to the program. Mike Penna in our Lexington studios. Jack is with me. He's joining me by phone here this evening. And Jack, boy, when you hear that race call, it has to send chills up your spine, doesn't it?
Well, it does send chills up. And then when he said, Tom said, it's America's horse. And when we went to the winner's circle, there were some young men that had a great big huge sign up, held it up. It's in the picture of the Breeders' Cup, the winner's circle, Ali Sheba for president. That was it was just a great thing. That horse had so much charisma. He'd kick them hind feet up when people clap for him, you know, and do a little dance for him. It was just, like I say, the Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cup still bring tears to your eyes.
Well, the Kentucky Derby was a year earlier in 1987. Let's talk about Ali Sheba for just a minute here. What was it about him that made him so special, Jack?
Well, he just had such a beautiful stride and such a long stride. And when I broke him at my farm in Kentucky, there'd be five or six of them galloping together. He'd be once around a 5/8 mile track, he might be a 16th mile in front of him. No extra urge or nothing, the same gallop. His stride was just that much bigger, that much better.
And you can really tell right away if those horses, like Ali Sheba, those special horses, if they have kind of that it factor, can't you?
Well, you can, Mike, but then they got to have that heart, which you can't look into. I can show you people that got a lot of talent, but they never make nothing of themselves. You know what I mean? And horses are the same way. You have horses that work like a good horse in the morning, but they don't prevent when they get in competition in the afternoon. You know what I mean? And then you'll have the one that don't show you nothing in the morning, and then in the afternoon he'll be a star. So you just got to see what they can do both ways. They'll let you know before you're done, and some of them it takes a little while. The Ali Sheba, the older he got, the better he got. He just kept getting stronger and stronger.
Well, he's a pretty good three-year-old as well. Take me back to that day in 1987 when you come to Churchill Downs. Walk me through that Kentucky Derby.
Well, I worked him a quarter mile that morning of the race, let him blow out, you know. And Wally DeLossi, the trainer, he always told me afterwards, he said, I told everybody when that horse went by, don't worry about him this afternoon. He won't get nothing, you know. But we did that. Good horseman, Tennessee Wright. He blew every horse in the morning, 1/8 mile. We always blew our horses out the morning of the race, you know. So on that afternoon, there were people talking. They were interviewing me, and I told them, I said, I wouldn't trade places or horses with anybody right now. That's how much confidence I had in him.
Well, and he certainly ran to your confidence as well.
He was something special.
Yeah, he was special that day. And then do you remember going down to the winner's circle? I mean, you must remember every detail of that, don't you?
Well, if you want to know the truth, I went over and slept in my car 2 hours before we went over the Derby.
Really?
Yeah, I don't get too nervous.
Never bothered you a bit?
No, I took a good nap before we went over. My car is right there by the barn, and I told the boys, holler at me when we're ready to go. I'm going to take a nap.
Yeah, you woke up in time to do the walkover, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was up, but I had a good 2 hour nap.
What was that walkover like? You remember that?
What?
That walkover with Ali Sheba. People had to be yelling his name, and it had to be very energetic.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people there when you're there for the Derby. A lot going on, but that horse, Charlie Whittingham, probably gave him the best compliment because his horse got sick, so he spent the week with me before the Derby. We're going to the track, and he said, that horse has a beautiful nervous system. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you can take a handful of fire and throw it between his hind legs. It'll never stick. He never sweats or nothing. You know, so it was quite a compliment for him, you know.
You move on 2 weeks later to the Preakness, and things go according to plan there as well. Tell me about that day.
Well, I just, you know, sometimes when you run a horse, and it was nip and tuck to have him ready for the Derby and everything after that and trapped up a Glottis and everything we did. So all week, that week after the 2 weeks after the Kentucky Derby, he was just kind of nonchalant, not too a lot excited or nothing like that. And even Jimmy Crowell told Craig Perrett that don't worry about Ali Sheba because he looks knocked out to me. He looks tired. So he was just a little, and I was worried myself because when we left Louisville on the airplane, he went to sleep and I went to sleep, you know. We both slept all the way up to Baltimore. And so then when he got to the end of the grandstand, Preakness Day, when they started clapping for him and calling his name, and that's where he learned to do that little dance. His eyes got in the paddock, were big as saucers. And Craig Perrett told me later about what Jimmy had told him. He said, and I told Jimmy, he said, take a look at that horse in the paddock now. He damn sure don't look like he's sleeping to me now. So.
Wow. Wow, that's a great story.
But anyway, it was he was just a sensational horse, and it probably, I would imagine, cost us the Belmont because he beat Bet twice so easy that day, you know? Chris just bet twice like he wanted to.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Every time I've talked with Chris McCarron, and he said it on the show several times, that he always blames himself for that loss in the Belmont Stakes. It was really hard on him.
Well, it was hard on him. And what really, I think you win the Preakness so easy that day. And everybody said, Crypto Clearance will set you, should have won the Derby, should have won the Preakness. And they kept changing jockeys. And I told him in the paddock the day of the Belmont, I said, Chris, this horse will be in front every step of the way today. And he looked at me like I fell off a banana wagon. And I said, Chris, trust me, I know him better than the back of my hand. And he broke two in front that day like a rocket. And he just sucked him back and sat there and waited and waited. And, of course, I found out, Craig Pratt told me later, that Jimmy Crow told him wherever you're at in the race, when Ali Sheba comes up to you, you hit it, bet twice, and go on with him, ride like you're in a quarter horse race. And that's what he did. We galloped up to him after three-quarters of a mile, and he took off. And Chris sat there. And then at the head of the lane, we got run up, gone west as rear, and got turned sideways in the track then, you know. But it was just one of them things. And a year later, when he set the track record in Woodward, Chris came back up and stood in the saddle and said, Jack, you're right. He can gallop faster than they run. I said, you're a year late and $5 million short.
Yeah, I've heard you say on several different occasions that you still want, I mean, if you were to do it right now, you want to win the Triple Crown because you truly believe that you had the horse with Ali Sheba.
I had the horse to win it, yeah. I'm going to get it if Baffert don't mess things up for me this year. I'm going to get it because I got some two-year-olds now again.
So. Yeah, well, we're going to be looking at another Triple Crown possibility here in just a couple of weeks. Just curious, from a trainer's perspective, Jack, what's it like with all that pandemonium and all the excitement of going for a Triple Crown? What's it like from the trainer's perspective in the 3 weeks from the Preakness to the Belmont?
Well, it was nothing. I mean, up to there, after we got beat at Belmont, I was still on TV and I wanted to cry, you know. it was after the race, it was heartbreaking, you know, that happened. But I'm on TV and wanting to cry and didn't dare do it. I cried when I won the Derby when they asked me about my father. I ended up crying on national TV when Jim McKay interviewed me. So.
Yeah.
But it was that horse could do just, I had so much confidence in that horse, it wasn't even funny. You know, some horses will lie to you, some horses have good days, some horses have bad days. That horse, he didn't have no bad days. He had good days. We just, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Chris made a mistake that day. He made a mistake in the Haskell with him, too. So, and then after that, he never made no more mistakes, you know. So it's just one of them things. You have good luck and you have bad luck. As my father always said, you take luck over brains any day. So,
yeah, absolutely.
One of them things that happen. And you got to be a man enough to. It's like the first Breeders' Cup with Gate Dancer. They should have took Wild again down and moved my number up. But the stewards seen it a different way. And you got to play by their rules. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, Gate Dancer was interesting because you had those vintage earmuffs that you put on him so that he wouldn't be distracted by all the noise. Tell me about Gate Dancer and tell me about what that decision to put those on him.
Well, I'd been to Argentina buying horses, and I seen them down there. They had earmuffs, but they were just for nets to keep because they had so many bugs and flies down there, you know, gnats and stuff. So every horse, darn near, wears earmuffs. But I had seen him, and I got the idea when Dalhousie told me he thought he was listening to noise to put a sponge in there where it went in his ear. When I was a kid, I didn't like them to put cotton in my ear, you know?
Yeah.
I just hated that when you had an earache. So, and I knew I seen guys put cotton in horses' ears so they can't hear, and I never did like that. So I've had this lady out in California design these and design the sponge that goes in inside of his ear, you know? The Year of Faces, and Gate Dancer loved him. Of course, then Eddie Dalhousie was too embarrassed to ride him with them earmuffs on. So that's when I got Cordero in the Preakness, and he set the track record.
He was too embarrassed to ride him?
Yeah, Cordero rode him in the Preakness, set a track record.
He wouldn't have been embarrassed with that performance, I can tell you that.
No.
Wow. No. Wow, yeah, he was some horse, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a good horse, good horse. Johnny Longdon probably gave him the best compliment of all. Johnny Longdon said if he was still riding races, that horse would never get beat. He loved that horse, loved him.
Wow. Jack Van Berg on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jack, tell me about a horse that people might not be as familiar with, like Gate Dancer, like Ali Sheba, a horse that you did some pretty good work with that you're never going to forget.
Well, I took Dave's friend when he was 8 and 9 years old. He was a good horse, a sprinter. And I won the Count Fleet with him 2 years in a row, and I run him in the Count Fleet as a 10-year-old. But he won the Count Fleet in Hot Springs and beat the best sprinters around when he was 8 and 9 years old. So, I took Bold Eagle, a sprinter from New Mexico, and was second in the Preakness win the Arkansas Derby with him. But the owners, when I run him in the Rebel, when the Rebel wouldn't even come to town because they thought I was crazy running for distance ground. He was win all the sprint races as a 2-year-old in New Mexico.
Wow. So, now, that was your first Derby starter as well, wasn't it, Bold Eagle?
Yeah, Mike, I don't know that to be a fact, but I had Den's Dancer, Bold Eagle, Bold Style, Bloomin' Affair in the Derby, Gate Dancer, Wheatley Hall.
Yeah.
And Ali Sheba.
Yeah. I remember reading something about, I think it was an excerpt from your book, actually, talking about the interesting exchange that you had with legendary broadcaster Howard Cosell before that Kentucky Derby with Bold Ego. Tell me about that.
Well, we're at Church of Downs, and Howard Cosell's interviewing me. And in his voice, he said, "Jack, why would you bring a New Mexico bred to Kentucky?" And he said, "Howard, I said, let me tell you something. He can't read, he can't write, but that son of a bitch can really run." And until Howard passed away, every time he see me, he brought that back up again.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Hey, tell me about some of the other famous people you've had the opportunity to meet in your career.
Oh, I've met a lot of people. John Forsythe was, I trained America on Targa for him and Opstein, Ken Opstein. And he was the nicest man. He was on all of them TV shows he was on. He was the voice of them girls.
Yeah, what
Rocco
was it?
Rocco Walsh and all them.
Yeah.
What was our John Forsythe on? I'm trying to think. Hmm. He was the voice. But he did the Breeders' Cup. He did the Eclipse for years, you know.
Yeah.
But he was good. Jack Klugman.
He was a big racing fan, wasn't he?
Codex, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he loved the sport.
I met some Liz Taylor. Joan Rivers, I just shot a movie section with her about 2 years before she passed away. Joan Rivers.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. You know, that's one of the neat parts about training and being around this sport, because this sport, you know, they call it the sport of kings, and I know nowadays there's so many partnerships that come up, and I think that's a good way for people to get involved that, you know, don't have the Jack Klugman money or the Joan Rivers type of money. But boy, to be able to meet those people and interact with them, Jack, that has to be a big thrill.
Well, it's I'm a little more country. They're nice people, and I don't like phony people. I don't like people who do good and get high on themselves and think they're too good for everybody. So them kind of people don't impress me. But I told you, people that I met was just down to earth. And John Forsythe was the finest gentleman that you ever met. Just as good as, I don't care who you were or where you were, he'd talk to you, you know. And them kind of people I enjoy. I met a lot of people, introduced a lot of people in California that are big stars, but they're not my cup of tea, you know?
Yeah.
I train horses for a guy that's one of the greatest country singers, Toby Keith, right now. He's just as good a man and the nicest guy that you'll ever meet. Just down to earth, loves his horses. I mean, he loves his horses. And that's the kind of people I like, Mike.
Yeah, well, I know. I met Toby Keith one time, and it was it was a big thrill. And you're right; he was one of those guys that would stand there and talk with you, just like he knew you his whole life. You know?
Yeah. And what I like about him, he loves them horses, and he don't push you or nothing. Take your time, do what's best for the horse. You know, He's a real horseman himself, I can tell you that.
Well, a lot of people will say that Jack Van Berg is a very patient trainer. Like you just said, don't push the horse, let him, you know, let the horse tell you. I call it more of an old school approach to training horses. And we talked about the difference with some of the younger guys today and then people like yourself, Jack, that have been horsemen in the sport for a very long time. And I'll tell you a quick story. Alan Jerkins, I ran into him shortly before he passed away this year. And he and I were talking about that and the fact that you don't see trainers training like they used to in the old days. He said it's like it's against the law to train a horse further than a half mile nowadays. Do you agree?
That's true. And it just, you know, I've watched some of these guys, and I won't mention no names. They'll have 100 of the best-bred two-year-olds in the country. And they come up with two good ones out of the bunch. They go to the sale and buy them horses for $500,000, $1 million. Well, you can send Ray Charles there, and when they get to $500,000 or $1 million, raise your hand up, because no, everybody else is going to check them over. When you're a good horseman and you go to the sale and can buy a horse for $30,000, $40,000 and make a Derby horse, then you're a good horseman. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
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 But I just don't believe, and there's so much money in these two-year-old races now and early in their life, that these young horses don't get a chance.
Yeah, that's a big point, that the economics have changed so much that to win as a two, and plus the value of that horse with their stud career, if they're precocious at two, becomes a much bigger number than what it would be if they didn't win at two.
Yeah, and of course that's what's hurt the racing too, because they retire and they get too selfish. The breeders get too selfish and want to take them to the breeding sheds like Alashiba. They talk the Scarboroughs into taking him to the breeding shed because don't get him beat again, don't get him beat again, you know. And it's like I told him, I said, you know, you won't get another one like this. You might as well enjoy him while you're here, you know.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get one like that.
Well, talk about training horses a distance of ground. I remember a piece that is in your book. And again, if people want to get the book, it's Jack from Grit to Glory. I remember a piece that's in your book, Jack, where you talked about a day out in California with Alashiba and working the horse with Chris McCarron. And it didn't quite go according to plan, but you were going to work him a distance of ground. Tell me about that day.
Well, that's when I was going to run him at Santa Anita, and it come up muddy. And Mr. Kilroy was a great racing secretary. He was a great manager of Santa Anita. And I went to him and I said, Mr. Kilroy, my horse is a favorite today, but I don't want to run him over that roll-down racetrack. He said, if he was my horse, I wouldn't run him either, Jack. So I had to go his first race as a four-year-old, 1.25 miles. So my dad always take a $25, $3,500, $5,000 horse and work him the last 3/8, half a mile with a handicap horse, you know. And the cheap horse would always beat the handicap horse. Well, I hooked three horses in, and I forgot the track was 1.8 miles when I was giving Chris instructions, and I told him we'd break off at the quarter pole, and I'd have a horse break off with him and work down to the turn, and that horse would ease back, and another one cut in and work to the next between the half and the 3/8 pole and hook in. Well, we had worked him instead of 1.25 miles. I worked him 1.75 miles that day. Coming back, I'm telling Chris I wanted him to go faster, and I wasn't thinking until it dawned on me. Track was 1.08 miles, so we worked 1.375 miles. But that horse is as far as he won a race was that day when he won the Stroog Stakes, 1.25 miles, his first out as a four-year-old. That's the farthest margin he ever won by.
Wow.
When we were riding out on track and I was on my pony, I was giving him instructions and I wasn't thinking about the track, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Jack, I know when you wrote Chris Katulak wrote the book, but you put that together, there was a piece in there where right in the beginning you wanted to make sure that the book was dedicated to your mom and your dad and your family, your children, all of your friends and all the people who helped you along the way, but especially your sister Betty, who is no longer with us. Tell me about her.
She was called me every day to see that I took my medication. She checked on the horses. She loved the horses. And her husband just sent me the other day, made up a book, Mike, You'd Die to Read It. From the time my parents were married, raise the children and everything. He kept records of everything. In fact, the Daily Racing Form had to call him about my dad's total wins at one time to check with him, because he checked records of everything. And he just had this book made for everybody, the family, that you cannot believe. And but she was just, she was a gem, and she liked to come spend time with me with the horses and everything. And when I wrote the book, she proofread most of the stuff that was going in the book, the same as I did with Chris. And one day I said something, maybe cussed a little bit, and she read that. Chris had quoted me, and she read that, and she said, "That ain't going in the book, Jack. We don't talk like that." So, but she was just a, she was just a sweetheart. She, even with my mom and dad, she would go to the races and stay with them for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And her husband, Harold, and she got a boy and a daughter that run their electric company now, but he is, he's 95 years old and still, he put this stuff together.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. And again, Jack, and from Grit to Glory.
Book dedicated to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. I can see why, for sure. No doubt about it. Let me wrap it up this way, Jack. So we only have about 4 minutes left here, but what do you want horse racing to remember about Jack Vanberg?
Well, I just want them to remember me as a good horseman, an honest horseman, and always tried to help other people. That's what I've always done in my life. Always tried to help everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where I want to be remembered. I've had a lot of friends in the horse racing business, and I don't think I've ever made any enemies that I know about.
Not that you know about. It's a good way to put it, my friend. Well,
Jack,
I said that's a great way to put it. That was well said, and I want to thank you for taking so much time to be with me here today. I really enjoyed the visit and hearing about many of those great moments,
Mike,
you've had in your
career. It's a real pleasure. I want to thank you. And anytime that I can do anything to help you or help racing, don't be afraid to call on me, okay?
I will certainly do it, Jack. I appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay. All right. Take care, Mike. Thank you.
Jack Vanberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, he will receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll go ahead and send those down to Jack, and really do appreciate his time here today for this hour. And whenever you get an opportunity to talk with a legend like that, you know that the stories are going to be amazing when they get rolling. And to hear him tell some of those stories about Gate Dancer and about Ali Sheba and meeting a guy like Howard Cosell, and boy, just unbelievable. And I want to thank Jim Krigall as well with Cal Density for helping to put this show together. He and Jack are very good friends. Jack's a huge supporter, a huge user of the product, Cal Density, and has been for a long time. And so Jim was very instrumental in helping me to put this show together tonight. So I want to thank him as well. But you think back on some of those statements that Jack made over the course of the last hour or so, and you think about his dad and what he meant to him. And then you hear Jack say, "Hey, I was never a very good father. I was always working. I was never there for my kids," but now he's getting the opportunity to do that. And he's always there whenever they need him now. You know, it's just one of those lessons that you learn as you go through life. But the point being that if you're going to achieve at that level in this sport, when I asked Richard Mandela what else he likes to do, well, this is all he knows. This is all he knows. This is it. I mean, this is what, if I asked Jack Vanberg, what else do you like to do? Well, he might have a couple of other interests, but it's all about the sport, and it's all about dedicating yourself completely to it. And it's like that with any sport, with any athlete. Derek Jeter is consumed with Major League Baseball. That's what made him so great. Michael Jordan, same thing with the NBA. Same thing with any great athlete, any great trainer in our sport. They are consumed with this sport. They have a passion for the horse, a love for the horse. Boy, just an amazing hour. My thanks to Jack Vanberg for taking the time here today. Don't forget, back next Wednesday with another edition of Trainer Talk. You can always catch a podcast of this one on our website, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And don't forget about all of our other programming on there as well. Jock Talk on Tuesday nights, Bristnet.com call-in show on Thursdays, and then our Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview on Friday, and of course the Equine Forum every Saturday morning. Check it all out, horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk presented by Fezzik Tipton.